I would like to welcome everybody to the class for Parshas Va'era, the second Parsha of Shemos. And in honor of Va'era, we're going to study something from Shemos, the Parsha before. Let me orient us that we are studying conversations with Hashem that appear in the Parshios. This Parsha and last Parsha was very abundant, very bountiful, lots of conversations. Now that Moshe Rabbeinu is on the scene, he's going to be speaking with Hashem almost every Parsha, so that won't be a problem. Last week we took a look at the long, extensive conversation that Moshe had with Hashem when Hashem appeared to him in the burning bush and requested of him to go to Mitzrayim. He had been living in Midian for many, many years with his family. He was requested by Hashem to go back to Mitzrayim, to Egypt, to facilitate and to engineer the Exodus. Moshe had many misgivings about it and expressed them all to Hashem, and Hashem responded. So Moshe took the charge and he returned. I'd like to look at a couple of small exchanges and then discuss a topic which sort of has the common thread in these exchanges. So first we're referring back to last week. One of the concerns that Moshe expressed to Hashem was the question of faith in the people. The people, how are they going to believe me? In 3:18, Hashem says, "Vishamu lekolecha." They will heed your voice. Don't worry. You and the elders of Israel shall come to the king of Egypt, etc. Now, in the beginning of chapter 4, on page 307, Moshe responded and said, "But they will not believe me. And they will not heed my voice, for they will say Hashem did not appear to you." Moshe doubts their ability to understand, to accept. Whereupon Hashem gave Moshe several signs or wonders called osos. Singular is os, or ot. There was the sign with the staff turning to the serpent. There was the hand becoming leprous when he would reach it into his clothing. Pull it out, it would be white like snow. There was the water turning to the blood. These were given as signs, purpose of which Hashem tells him, it shall be that if they do not believe you and do not heed the voice of the first sign, they will believe the voice of the latter sign. If they don't believe the two signs, then they will listen to the third sign. So apparently this was a response to the question of having faith. Signs, wonders. Okay, let's move on. The end of the Parsha of Shemos, last week, Moshe goes back to Mitzrayim. He has an audience with Pharaoh. He pops the question. He says, "Please let my people go." Initially, he only asked for three days' journey into the desert so that they could serve God. And the response was not very favorable. Chapter 5, verse 4. Vayomer aleihem melech Mitzrayim lama Moshe v'Aaron. The king of Egypt said to them, "Moshe and Aaron, why do you disturb the people from its work? Go to your own burdens. Go back to work." And not only that, he ordered the taskmasters to make the work harder. Instead of giving them the straw to manufacture the bricks, let them gather straw on their own. But they will still have the same quota of bricks that they have to produce. Well, the heat was turned up. The people were suffering even more. They couldn't tolerate the workload. The Egyptian taskmasters were on top of foremen that were Jews and forced the foremen to force the workers. Anyway, the foremen come and cried out to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh just turned a deaf ear. "You are lazy. You say, let us go and bring offerings to Hashem. Go work. Straw will not be given to you, but still provide the quota." So the foremen come to Moshe. They're angry, upset, and they say, "May Hashem look upon you and judge, for you have made our very scent abhorrent in the eyes of Pharaoh and the eyes of his servants, to place a sword in their hands to murder us. What you accomplished by going to him was to make life unbearable, if it wasn't already more unbearable." And Moshe took this cry, and he just brought it to Hashem. And he said, "My Lord, why have you done evil to this people? Why have you sent me? From the time I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he did evil to this people, but you did not rescue your people. You told us you were going to take us out, and things have gone from bad to worse. It's interesting. That's the end of chapter 5. The Parsha Shmos does not end with chapter 5, with that verse. It adds one more verse, which is chapter 6, verse 1. And that's the end of the Parsha. It seems strange. Why would the Parsha end after one verse of the new chapter? Why doesn't it end at the end of the old chapter? Just one more verse. It doesn't seem to be a good place to end. Do you know what the answer is? We, the Jewish people, did not assign the chapters. That was assigned by the Greeks. And there's a pattern that the Greeks always like to end a chapter on a low note. And the sages who assigned the portions of the week divided it differently. So listen to the difference. How would you leave shul if the last verse that was read was, from the time I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he did evil to this people, but you did not rescue your people. Mincha will be at 5:20. You just leave on a sour note. Rather, the Chachamim, the sages, said, one more verse. Hashem said to Moshe, now you will see what I shall do to Pharaoh. For through a strong hand will he send them out, and with a strong hand will he drive them from his land. Ah, a high note. There's hope. In fact, the commentaries point out that the reason why the work got harder was precisely because Hashem had decided to take them out earlier than planned. And there was a certain measure of suffering that the Jewish people had to undergo in order to be worthy of redemption. Hashem would have spread it out over a longer period of time, but since he saw their dire situation, he intensified the work in order to bring it to a swifter close. That is why even the intensification of the work was for our benefit. But there's a word here that I recall. I couldn't find the source. I thought I knew where it was. I couldn't find it there. But I definitely recall the following question. Why does Hashem say to Moshe, now you will see what I shall do to Pharaoh? It implies that, Moshe, I was going to do it one way, but because you came and you forced my hand, you forced the question, why have I done this? I have to now respond to you differently. Now I'm going to have to show you what I will do to Pharaoh. I will have to show a strong hand so that he will send you out, and with a strong hand he will drive them from his land. Yad Chazaka, in other words, my strong hand. I am going to force Pharaoh with a strong hand. You know, the strong hand is a reference to all of the plagues that we are going to read about in Va'era and in Bo. Hashem is saying to Moshe, now this may sound strange to you, but Hashem is saying to Moshe, I wasn't going to do all those 10 plagues originally, but because you were impetuous, because you forced me, now I have to bring out my artillery and I have to force Pharaoh in a more wondrous way. That's a strange cause and effect relationship. I'm going to come back to that. But it almost rings similar to what we just read before. Moshe came to Hashem and said, they're not going to believe me. So Hashem said, okay, Moshe, let me show you some signs. Hashem wasn't going to show him the signs. But since Moshe asked, they're not going to believe me, Hashem said, oh, okay, I'll give you some signs. Similar pattern. Hashem, why are we suffering so much more? Oh, okay, so now I will bring the 10 plagues. There seems to be like a plan A, plan B here. And the more we ask a question, the more impatient we are, the more we force the issue, the more Hashem has to respond in a miraculous kind of a way. One more little exchange, and then we're going to discuss something which I believe is very central here to Judaism. In the beginning of this parsha, God spoke to Moshe and said to him, I am Hashem. I appeared to Abraham, to Yitzchak, and to Yaakov as, I'm going to pronounce it not as it's written, Kael Shakai. The pronunciation is really different if you look on page 319. That's the name that I appeared to them as. But with my name Hashem, which is also not the real pronunciation, I did not make myself known to them. My association with the patriarchs was as Kael Shakai, not as Hashem. But now I am Hashem. To you, Moshe, at this time, in this place, I am revealing myself in a different way. Hashem. What's the difference between Kael Shakai and Hashem? Well, several weeks ago in Bereishis, we actually read from this page. Kael Shakai comes from the word the mighty who is sufficient. It denotes God as the one who sets limits on creation by establishing the laws of nature, the limitations within which the universe functions. Kael Shakai is God who is running the world without performing miracles, so that he does not openly disrupt the normal course of nature. That's the way the patriarchs perceived God. The patriarchs did not witness things like the 10 plagues. They saw miraculous victories, yes. They saw God's intervention, yes, but not in miraculous ways, in natural ways. They won the war. They found food in famine, but it wasn't a miracle like the water turned to blood and it was dark for 7 days straight or 6 days. It didn't happen. That's Kael Shakai. Now he is revealing himself as Hashem, who can change nature at will. Furthermore, another difference between Kael Shakai and Hashem, Rashi points out, is Kael Shakai is the manifestation of God who promises things, but doesn't necessarily fulfill them yet, because the time hasn't come. Look at all the things that Hashem said to the patriarchs. You will have many children. You will inherit the land. Did they ever see the fulfillment of these promises? No. Did they ever question God? No. Moshe is saying, and he's just really carrying the burdens of the people, but he's saying, you said, but it didn't happen. You said we would go out, but it's gotten worse. When are we going out? Fulfill, let us see. And Hashem is saying again, once again, you're forcing me. I had a plan. The patriarchs didn't ask, when is it going to happen already? But you are asking, and therefore I have to bring it to fruition. It's the same pattern. You ask, and then I have to respond. I wasn't going to, but you're forcing me to do it. And probably the most surprising thing of the whole Parsha, the most surprising verse of the entire Parsha, more surprising than the 10 plagues, is the one coming up. Hashem tells Moshe, okay, we're going to go through it. Now it's going to happen. He tells them exactly. Therefore, say to the children of Israel, I am Hashem, and I shall take you out from under the burdens of Egypt. I shall rescue you from their service. I shall redeem you with an outstretched arm. And with great judgments, I shall take you to me for a people, and I shall be a God to you. And you shall know that I am Hashem your God, who takes you out from under the burdens of Egypt. I shall bring you to the land about which I raised my hand to give it to Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. It's going to happen now. And I shall give it to you as an heritage. I am Hashem. All the things that the Jewish people have been waiting to hear and been waiting to see. Okay? So Moshe spoke accordingly to the children of Israel. He went to the people who were just at the end of their rope, and he said, it's going to happen now, guys. So you would think, what would their reaction be? Shkoyach, finally! Yay! It's about time! Oh, thank God! What does the Torah say? They did not heed Moshe because of shortness of breath and hard work. Sorry, Moshe, we don't have time for this. We've got to build these buildings. We've got to find the bricks. We've got to find the straw and we've got to make the bricks. No time for chit-chat. That, to me, is one of the most surprising verses in the whole Torah. Okay, what meaning can we make from all of this? And I want to put it in the context of our starting point, our reference point that we always come back to from Rabbi Luzzatto. Please remember that the purpose of this world is to give man the opportunity to find and to choose to connect with God. For man to choose to connect with God. What is necessary for man to choose to connect with God? What conditions must there be in order to give man the ability to choose to connect with God? That he have free will, that it not be openly revealed to him. Because if it's openly revealed to him, if it's handed to him on a silver platter, then he's not choosing it. And then he's not really changing. He's not really connecting with God because he was given it without his choice. This world is a world of finding, of choosing, of accomplishing, of man exercising his will in relation to God. That means God has to create the world with a concealment. Now, one of the conditions is the more that we choose God, the more he will reveal himself. But it has to come from man's choosing. If man doesn't choose, God hides more and more and more. So, we have a problem here because the Jewish people in Egypt were so far removed from God that they couldn't choose him if they tried. So, there was going to be a certain degree of revelation here. Revelation, God was going to jumpstart the process. But Hashem's preference is to keep it as concealed as possible, whenever possible, to give man the ability to choose, to exercise some internal understanding, some internal choice, and not to try to make it so revealed. And furthermore, if you do a miracle for someone, if God does a miracle, so then they see God, right? How long does that last? How long does any type of inspiration last? No. Inspiration lasts momentarily. When you see something and it inspires you, it lasts maybe a day, maybe 2 days, maybe a week. If you don't internalize the message and make it yours, you're going to lose it. Signs, wonders, that does not give a person faith. This is in the Rambam, Maimonides. This is a very, very important principle to understand. Maimonides says, this is chapter 8 in the laws of Yesodei HaTorah, the fundamental principles of the Torah. The Jews did not believe in Moshe, our teacher, because of the wonders that he performed. Whenever anyone's belief is based on wonders, he has misgivings, because it is possible to perform a wonder through magic or sorcery. Okay, the Rambam is saying even a different point. You could be skeptical about wonders and miracles, as we see from the magicians of Pharaoh. Once the plague started, you know, the first and second, Pharaoh's magicians were able to duplicate. All the wonders performed by Moshe in the desert were not intended to serve as proof of the legitimacy of his prophecy. They were performed for a purpose. It was necessary to drown the Egyptians, so he split the sea and sank them in it. We needed food, he provided us with manna. We were thirsty, he split the rock, providing us with water. The miracles that occurred was to give us something that we needed. It wasn't the basis of our faith. What is the source of our belief in him, in Moshe and in Hashem? Ultimately, the revelation at Mount Sinai. Our eyes saw, not a stranger's. Our ears heard, and not another's. There was fire, thunder, and lightning. Face to face, God spoke to you. So at Mount Sinai, it wasn't just a miracle. At Mount Sinai, there was witness that God gave the Torah to Moshe. That's knowledge. We saw it. We understood what was going on. It's not that God did some type of a magic show and we said, wow. He showed us that he was talking to Moshe. From that point on, it was us studying the Torah, hearing the words, internalizing it, and passing it on from father to son, from teacher to student. The basis of faith, of Jewish faith, is learning, understanding, comprehending. It's the stuff that goes on within us. Because this is a world for man choosing and understanding. It's not a spectator sport. Judaism is not a spectator sport. It's not something in which we say to God, show us a miracle. Every time God does a miracle, either there's a need for it, because he needs to give us something, or where he's being forced to, because we just can't get ourselves to get jump-started. And that's why, the Rambam says later on, that's why Moshe said, they're not going to believe me. They may listen to me temporarily, but they're not going to believe me, really. And Hashem says, I know, Moshe. Just take these signs with you, because they may be so far removed, you might just have to do something just for a temporary moment, just a fix. It's kind of like when a person, God forbid, his heart stops. It needs to be started again with artificial means. And then it's vital that the person's heart starts to beat on its own. You can't just keep shocking a person. Same thing over here. Moshe, take a bag of tools, take these signs with you, because they need to be jump-started. But believe me, this is not the basis of the faith. Even the ten plagues is not going to be the basis of their faith. And Moshe was right. They're not going to believe me just because I say a few words to them. But we have to get them over this hump. And again, the conversation that Hashem had with Moshe, why have you made the work harder for us? It's the same response. The people are crying out just because they don't have the faith. They don't have the peace of mind in knowing that what I said is going to come true. They have to see it. They have to see it to believe it. And so I'm going to have to give them something to see. That's why he says, now you will see that I will bring my strong hand. Now that you asked, now that you forced it, I'm going to have to bring these miracles. Because you're not ready yet. Your heart's not strong enough to beat on its own. And the last comment, that Moshe comes to the Jewish people and he says, I've got great news for you. It's everything that they wanted to hear. And we were so shocked and so amazed that they didn't even give him the time of day. They didn't even hear his words. We're working. We're too busy, Moshe. We just don't have time for this shenanigans. Don't you see that we have a deadline? Don't you see that we can hardly breathe? We're short of breath and we're so burdened by our tasks. Come on, Moshe. We don't have time for this nice story, nice imagination. Nice creative thinking, Moshe. Come on. This is a spiritually sick people. They can't even hear about their own salvation because they're so entrenched in what they're doing. That is the human condition, that we can only see what is before our eyes. We can't see beyond that. We can't see that there's God, that there's a higher reality, that there's a promise for the future, that there is light beyond the tunnel. It's just above our vision. It's just above our line of sight. And we can't see it. That's the problem. That is the challenge of life. On one hand, in order for us to be able to truly merit, we have to be given the choice. It has to be concealed. But if it's concealed, how are we going to see it? Or how are we going to know that it's there? Now, we gave the answer. The answer is that at the beginning, Hashem had to boost us, and he had to give us these miracles just to get us going. But eventually, he took us to Mount Sinai, and he gave us the Torah, which is the self-direction for us to be able to make the right choices. Yes, we have to study it. Yes, we have to learn it. Yes, we have to absorb it and internalize it and integrate it into our living and our thinking and our psyche. But at least he gave us the tools. He gave us the material to do so. Without that, we're blind. But do we also know that even after we've been given the Torah, it's far from guaranteed that we are going to succeed? Because we are also in the position of these people. We are also entrenched in what we're doing. We're also blinded. It's like driving in blinding rain. You can only see what's immediately ahead of you. You can't see beyond. This is a condition that Rabbi Luzzatto speaks about at the very beginning of The Path of the Just, which is his book on ethics, on spiritual development, not on the philosophy, but on the spiritual development, the personal growth, the ladder. And he describes really just the starting point to getting onto the ladder of growth. The real starting point is Torah, Torah study. You make time for Torah study, that we have to do. But he says also, he describes the first level after the Torah is the level of Zehirus. In this edition, it's translated as vigilance. I've seen it translated as watchfulness or as carefulness. The point is, the definition of this trait, I'll just read a little bit of the beginning of this chapter. The concept of vigilance relates to a person's actions and affairs. He must contemplate and survey his actions and his conduct to see whether they are good or not, so as not to risk the loss of his soul, heaven forbid. And he must not pursue his habits thoughtlessly, the way a blind man walks as in darkness. What's required of a person to be able to see his way through the fog, to see his way through the concealment, is to stop and contemplate. Contemplate his actions. To see whether they are good or not. Just to stop and ask a question. What am I doing? How am I doing it? Do I have the right goals? Am I pursuing those goals? But if I don't think, and I just do, and I just get up in the morning and say, I've got to make bricks. I've got to gather straw. I don't have time for this. I don't have time for questions. I don't have time to contemplate. Then we are in the same boat as the people in Mitzrayim who were not even open to hear the message that was what they were looking for, which was to end their burdens. They couldn't even hear that their burdens were going to end because they were so entrenched in their burdens. Rabbi Luzzatto even compares this condition to the workload that the Pharaoh said. This is why the wicked Pharaoh said, the work shall be made harder for the men, so that they shall be busy doing it and not talk about trivialities. His intent was not only to deny them any respite from their work, to take note of their own plight or to plot against them, but also to prevent them from any reflection by means of ceaseless toil. Earlier, this is surely one of the shrewd ploys of the evil inclination, which relentlessly labors to burden the hearts of people until they are left with no spare moment either to contemplate or to observe the path they are taking. For it knows, that is the evil side of the world, the evil force knows that if they would only minimally devote attention to their ways, listen to this, they would no doubt immediately begin to regret their deeds, and this regret would intensify until they would abandon sin altogether. I know it sounds a little harsh, but what's saying over here is that we have a human condition over here. The world is concealed. Is concealment is a place for concealment of God. That means that all we're going to be able to see is what's right in front of us. All we're going to see is the hammer and the nail. All we're going to see is the bricks and the straw. Nothing. Nothing else. And then we're just going to go live life as long as God gives us. And at the end of the day, we're going to look back and we're going to just say, how many bricks did we make? How many nails did we hammer? But we know that there's something beyond that. There is the promise, that same promise that Hashem gave to Moshe. I am Hashem. I will rescue you from your service. I will redeem you with an outstretched arm, with great judgments. I will take you to me for a people. I shall be God to you. You shall know that I am Hashem your God. There is a rich and full spiritual reality, a higher reality, which is right here for our taking, right here in this world. We have to be able to see right beyond the line of sight. What is the key to that? What is the antidote? Says Rabbi Luzzatto, contemplation. Stop working. We have Shabbos, Baruch Hashem. That's what Shabbos is for. To stop working, stop the rat race, and ask ourselves contemplative questions. We have the ability to do that because we have our Torah. In Egypt, they did not have the Torah, they had to be given artificial respiration or the heart machine or whatever it is. They had to be given. That's what the plagues were for. But don't think that the plagues is the ideal. The plagues is really not the preferred method of acquiring faith. The preferred method of acquiring faith is through our own intellect, through our own questioning, through our own self-assessment and contemplation, because that's what makes it us. That's what makes it really true to us. It's not something that is a passing inspiration. And after we have gone through this, it's good that we have the miracles in our past. It's good to know that when Hashem needs to, He can dazzle us just temporarily to get us to the next step. But it's also to know what is the ideal. The ideal is to choose to use our God-given abilities and our intellect to be able to study and to know and to understand. And if we don't, if we just voluntarily continue the burdens and the work and not take the time out, we are not going to have any more sight than the people of Egypt, even after we've gotten the Torah. Rabbi Luzzatto was writing for us here and now. We must take the time and the care to engage in the process of contemplation. I hope this was clear. This is such a central part of our tradition, talking about the 10 plagues. What I'm sharing with you here is really that there's much, much more than just to recount the story of the 10 plagues. That's really just the starting spark. What's important is what comes after it, and particularly what we do with our own abilities. May we derive enough inspiration from the Parsha Vaera to be able to go to the next step and to climb the ladder of personal and spiritual growth. Yes, sir.
You're saying that God was sending the Jews a message by way of the plagues that the Jews can...
I'm suggesting...
I think the Jews too were... No?
First of all, as far as that goes, there's a different question. He was sending Paro the message, but the purpose of it all was to send us the message. We've discussed before that right now the spiritual keys of the world rest in the hands of Israel. Pharaoh is just a servant of God at this point. He is playing a certain role, set up some type of a contrast for us to understand. The primary objective is for us to know God. I believe that it's not even a question of a choice. When we saw the miracles, who could choose otherwise? We had to see God.
Well, here's the sticking point for me. The sticking point for me is that if God wanted to send us the message, you sort of agree with me that it's our choice to choose faith and to choose Him. Why did He then say that He was going to be hardening Pharaoh's heart? Why did He cause us to become skeptical about His own power, in effect?
What is the... those two statements, what is the...
Well, I mean...
Hardening Pharaoh's heart.
If he, in effect, knew the outcome of the plague, when the plague was going to happen, Pharaoh was not going to react favorably, his heart was going to be hardened, therefore it was going to be a failed plague, in effect, and therefore the Jews, if anything, could lose faith, not gain faith as a result of that. Why would God go to that length? What was He up to, in effect?
Well, if Pharaoh wouldn't have had a hard heart, he would have sent us out right away. Hashem, for some reason, He wanted us to see all 10 plagues.
Yeah.
So He hardened Pharaoh's heart so that he could have more plagues. That's what it says in Parshas Bo.
We needed 10 plagues to
convince? Yeah, apparently so. Because each plague represented a different aspect of God's dominion.
I would have been happy with the first one.
Yeah, but you know, then we would have said God controls the water. But what about the land? What about the sky?
So we were
each
learning
one.
About the supernatural qualities of God.
Right,
this.
Right.
And He wanted us to get that lesson.
Mastery
well.
Over the entire universe. Yes. 10 God. Plagues corresponding to the 10 statements with which God created the world. Yes, Ron.
So, two things. So one thing, the first thing I'm going to say is Rabbi Kransky said something very interesting the other day about how in order for us to be ready to take all the laws, to go to Har Sinai, to take the burden of the Torah upon us, you know, a regular person walking down this, any regular people, and you come and you say, you're going to have to do this, it's a scary thing. So you have to have a relationship. God made a situation where we were dependent on Him. He put us into Mitzvah to grow, but the only way for us to come out and take the Torah mm-hmm. was to be able to realize we're dependent on Him, mm-hmm. and then we could accept the law. That was
right.
The first thing I wanted to say about the hardship over the 1 year. It was so hard.
Uh-huh.
So, but then the second thing is it was Nida Keneged Nida. Everything that was done to the Jewish people by Egypt was undone So there was, that's what I learned about what each thing was hung on. And the Jewish people had to see with their own eyes.
Uh-huh.
The dust, you know, the stuff that they just did to them. Yeah, the dust.
Oh, measure for measure. Yeah.
But, yeah. What was the dust again? It was something.
The light.
The light. No, but I'm saying the light was because that the Egyptians did.
In the field, they had the dust would stick to them.
Something like that. It was so horrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then they had to have it. Everything
right.
Should be watched with their own eyes.
Right.
Get undone.
So justice.
They saw justice. Right, right, right. The 10 plagues were very, very illustrative. Larry.
One question. I think they're related. The ability of the people at Sinai to say, whatever it is, we accept. They didn't hear the Torah. They accepted it.
Right.
We'll accept it.
Right. Right.
What changed within them so that they could do that?
This is what we talked about last week. I think it was what Ron was just saying. They saw how dependent they were on God that they accepted whatever he said. He saved them. When somebody saves you, you believe in them. You trust them. And if he tells you to do this, you do it.
As I've been reading, they didn't have the opportunity to confront God until he spoke at Sinai. And he spoke after they said, we'll accept it.
But Moshe had conveyed a message from him. That's correct.
To
you're right. They said, Na'aseh v'nishma, we will do and we will hear, on the day before they heard him speak to them. That's correct. Because Moshe had relayed the message. Trusting in Moshe was just as much of a key to their accepting the Torah as trusting in Hashem.
Now, the sages say that they spent 40 years in the desert, not because the generation was unfaithful with the spies, but because it took that long for this ability to see beyond the veil, as it were. It took that long.
Mm-hmm.
It had to take a new generation to do it.
Okay.
Is that...
That's very plausible. I mean, you could mesh that with the idea of the spies by saying the failure of the spies to see the goodness of the land was symptomatic of them not having that ability to see.
But isn't it more humane to say the reason for the 40 years was to develop character and develop sagacity rather than punishment?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. But the punishment is not unfitting. It's not a crime. It's a lack of ability. They came back. You have to have tremendous faith. We spoke about this on the Parsha of Shalach. You have to be able to look at something which seems humanly impossible to do, humanly impossible to survive in that land without God's help. You have to have such a level of trust to be able to feel confident and safe. And if they came back and said, we can't do it, that's because that's what level they were on. So it's the same thing. They didn't have the character, i.e., they couldn't see themselves going to the land. And therefore Hashem said, fine, we won't go to the land. Next generation will go to the land. We'll lay the groundwork. It's not a punishment per se, you're a bad boy, now take the consequences. Hashem doesn't do that to us. Hashem gives us whatever we can take so that we can succeed.
But Hashem does punish.
A punishment is something that is necessary to help us.
He punished Moses by not allowing him to enter the Holy Land because Moses defied him.
In such a minuscule way.
Right, but it's a punishment.
Well, not here, though. There is a way. God says there's a difference between what Moshe did and what Avram did. Didn't he rebuke him? They never complained. And he said that God was evil. That was a terrible thing for him.
You did evil to us.
You did evil.
Was this connected with, did some people say that that's why he didn't go into the land?
I think that's one of
the combination of this and the rock?
Mm-hmm. Mm. And because that's what he's telling him. Hey, they trusted me.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't say anything bad.
Mm-hmm.
And now you say I did evil.
Yeah.
So I think that
right.
has to do
right.
with
it's rebuking
trust.
Them.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. Now, he was just representing. He was like the attorney. I mean, it could be that he was just
The way he did
using
this,
their words.
You remember what you just told us. He ended off on a good note.
Yeah.
But after he got that out and we read the Torah, then he takes
them
to the woodshed.
Back, yeah. Let's go back to what you said the first time.
Yeah, he did. Because you can start the parsha like that, but you can't finish it like that.
Right.
But he really gave it to him good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, question. You may not be able to answer today. Fine. I just wanted to at some point talk about it. the time that was needed to make their life harder, but it was part of their portion, needed to be fulfilled. That's why it became harder. I mean, everything is layered, layered, layered. So this is one of the layers that Pharaoh became harsher, but it was actually part of their portion. They, they needed that harshness to complete their portion because it was being shortened. Their time was being shortened. So I would just, I'm just interested in hearing that.
Well, let me just say this. It's a complicated, anytime you're dealing with divine judgment, it's beyond our comprehension. But we do know that sometimes we experience suffering in ways that make sense to us, things that we can learn from, and we could say, okay, now I understand. And sometimes there is just something that we just endure it, and we believe that there's something good to it, even though we don't really know the reason.
Fulfill the book, as the man used to sing. We're here to fulfill the book.
Fulfill. Rabbi Luttazzo discusses this at length, that there's the physical part of us that has to be purified in order for us to receive the ultimate goodness in the world to come. There's a Jewish expression that when somebody experienced some type of a mishap, you say to them, it should be a kapara. It should be an atonement. Nobody is saying, this is why it happened, you did this, and it may not have been something that you did, it may be something that was, that maybe your suffering is atoning for your whole generation and for your whole family, or who knows. There's so many different cheshbonot, so many different calculations that we don't even attempt to understand. But there is a feeling that even this seeming harshness is benevolent. I don't fault the Jewish people for not knowing this because they didn't have that orientation yet. But that part of our tradition, part of our Torah, part of our oral tradition is that everything God does is for the best. And that's all I can say in a general sense. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.